having been in LA for a year now and speaking to a lot of other big YouTubers, the main message I'm hearing is they feel a bit lost. They feel a little bit like they don't know what they're doing with their lives or their channels or anything, and but they want to make more of a difference. Having heard that and being in a position to be a bit more of a like an older mentor figure, I want to start this thing called the Social Good Club, where I can support and create this kind of community and network to support creators to do kind of more social impact content on their channels. Awesome. And then I also want to do like maybe week-long trips where I take creators away and we'll go and tell stories, or like tell stories of hope around topics to do with humanitarian things or environmental issues around the world.
Welcome to That Creative Life. Hi, my name is Sarah Dici and I am your host. I talk with artists, YouTubers, CEOs, and everyone in between. I hope this podcast helps you live your best creative life. Enjoy. What's up, everyone? Welcome to another episode of That Creative Life. Today we have a very exciting guest, Louie Cole.
Hello.
Woo! From Fun for Louie. So you are such an iconic creator. So I have so many questions for you. Hopefully we can keep it to an hour. But right now we're at Sony Camera Camp in Montana. So it's been fun to catch up.
And Montana is beautiful, by the way.
Isn't it beautiful? It's so beautiful. It's nice to be in nature for me, but you're in nature a lot. So you have a lot of projects going on all the time. So update the audience a little bit of what you've been up to recently. And then there's definitely some questions of current projects and stuff I have. That's
recently,
a big question, right?
Yeah,
because you're all over the place.
I'll try and summarize where I currently am in life.
Yes.
So a year ago, I moved to Venice Beach in LA. It's the first permanent home I've had for 6 years. And that's shifted a whole ton of things in my life, including kind of my focus on what I'm doing on YouTube, slowed my travels down a lot. Having said that, I am still traveling. So I just got back from Kazakhstan like a few weeks ago, which was really cool. That was my 85th
I don't even know where that is on the map.
Country.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is very impressive.
Yeah, a lot of people don't have any idea where Kazakhstan is. Do you remember Borat?
Yes.
He's from Kazakhstan. Well, he was supposedly from Kazakhstan. Okay. That was the joke. What's funny is that was the only reference I knew about Kazakhstan, and none of what he did or what he showed was anything to do with Kazakhstan.
A misrepresentation.
Yeah, even the words he used weren't Kazakh words. Like he was saying like Yakshamash and Jankui. Like those are Polish words. Anyway, I learned all this when I was there. But yeah, it was super fascinating country. And I got to travel with my dad. So he was on school holidays, like he's a teacher. So I took him with me and it was really,
That's
really
so cool. How do you decide now on what countries to go to? Because you've obviously done so much traveling. Is it, oh, that seems different? I imagine it's hard to find different for you though.
Yeah, I think I get a lot of brand opportunities to go. So that was like I was going to talk at a tourism conference. Mm-hmm. It was paid and it seemed like a really cool thing because I was like, wow, Kazakhstan. So I think at the moment, because I'm not really seeking out travel as much, but obviously that's what I've built my brand around.
Right.
Most of the jobs coming in are still based around travel, which is still cool. It means I can still get a bit of travel in, but I think I'm slowly trying to figure out, okay, what other than travel, which I still enjoy, but I feel like I really want to stoke the passion behind what I'm doing again. And I feel like travels I enjoy, but it's not like this burning excitement and passion I had before for it. So I'm just trying to figure out what's next, really.
Well, you've been traveling for so long. You've been doing YouTube for so long. So I imagine that you can't do something forever, right? And I think that led to your most recent decision to kind of slow the roll on the daily vlogging. Mm. So what led you to that? Was it just, hey, I need a little bit of change of pace? I'm kind of tired.
It was, what triggered it was the end of 2017. So that was like over a year and a half ago. I did this round the world flight, which was this crazy trip. It's the craziest thing I've ever done. And I'm still, for those of you that know me and know that I kickstarted the documentary for that flight, like it's still coming. It's very, very, very close to being done. My audience has been very patient with me. But anyway, so we did 3 month circumnavigation around the world. And I decided, obviously, to daily vlog it.
Obviously. Oh, yeah.
But it was like the most next level video edits you could imagine. Basically, we were, a lot of the days we were flying for like between, you know, 4 to 8 hours. And
give people some perspective of the plane size.
Yeah, so we got a 1970s single engine Cessna plane, which is basically smaller than the inside of a car.
So, and it was only two people.
Yeah, so you're cramped inside, and I had four GoPros rolling for every flight, plus in-flight audio, plus multiple cameras. And the end of the day, I would dump all the footage. It'd probably take me like 2-3 hours each day to dump footage. Then I would like start compiling a timeline, pulling in and syncing like the GoPro footage to try and pick out funny moments in flight. Then I would go through like the 4 hour flight and try and grab a few moments to put in the vlog. But basically the vlogs were taking, you know, anywhere between 3 to 8 hours to edit. And I was trying to keep up with them relatively real time, but I did fall behind. But I was filming each day. So it's just like the most mammoth workload you can imagine. And on top of that,
were you posting every day?
Most days. Okay. I think by the end of the 3 months, I got a month behind. So over the 3 months, I basically essentially missed 2/3 of like a couple of days a week.
Gotcha.
Anyway, all I'm saying is after that 3 months of like the most sleep deprived, I mean, it was the best adventure, yeah, but also the most sleep deprived I've ever been, barely slept. And it was like really high intensity in terms of stress of like trying to do the trip, trying to complete it, trying to stay like friends with JP who I did it with, and just trying to balance that whole, just the intensity of it all.
Because when you're in those close quarters with a person for that, yeah, amount of time, there's going to be ups and downs, right?
Yeah, so it was all of that piled on top. And then by the end of the trip, I was like, had depleted my energy levels more than I've ever done in my life. So it was like beyond burnout. It was like running on fumes, completely delirious. And I remember I just needed like, so me and Raya after that went to Hawaii for 2 weeks. And what scares me is I can't remember any of that. It was so intense that I can't remember. I have vague flashbacks of Hawaii, but it was like, I was so broken.
Well, hopefully you got time to chill though. Like, was it a chillaxing time?
I mean, I was still trying to catch up with the edit. So I think I was editing most of the time in Hawaii.
And then I'm sure Raya was like, hey, what's up?
Yeah. So it was just, I think it was that moment. I was like, I can't do this anymore. And to be fair, that was a very extreme example. So after that, I was still vlogging, but I was slowing down, missing a few days a week. And then once I moved at the end of last year, so like September last year, where I'd already been slowing down the vlogs, and then I moved to a house with my friends in LA, and I just realized I don't really want to be just vlogging my day-to-day life in one house, like just with this, you know, in the having a similar day each day. And my audience didn't really want to watch that either. I think I did a few vlogs like, I'm settling down a bit, but still traveling occasionally, but I'm kind of just, it's, you know, I was just trying to explain I'm switching my life up a little bit, and I didn't get the best reaction. And I also was just like, to be honest, I don't really want to vlog my life at home. So that was like the decision maker for me. I was like, I need to figure out a new direction which really excites me and excites my viewers. So I'm kind of still in that experiment really and journey.
I want to definitely get back to the world flight eventually.
That's quite a long answer to your question.
Oh, I love it though. But how did you deal with the transition? Because I feel like so many times creators feel pigeonholed. They feel they have to do XYZ because that's what their audience expects of them. So really doing what you did, it is a leap of faith, right? Because you're like, oh, will people leave? Are they going to stay? So how has that been so far? And are you still trying to experiment with formats and topics, or are you just kind of settled with, hey, I'm going to do what I'm going to do and you can stick around if you want?
I'm figuring it out. I think I've experimented with a few things, but at the moment I'm trying to wrap my head around like, how do I keep some level of consistency and kind of what I've seen working on YouTube a lot more. It's trying to balance like what works,
right,
and then also what do I enjoy.
It always has to be a middle ground.
Yeah, so yeah. I'm like, I think where my channel's been a struggle is that YouTube, people have enjoyed more and more niche things where you really know, okay, this is what that channel's about. And the fact that it's not all about travel now, and even when it was about travel, it was also like about me and my life, and it would be my friends. It wasn't all just like, I never really did like travel tips and which beaches to visit and like that kind of content. So it's not like, if you're purely looking for travel advice, it's not, that wasn't my thing. It was more just like follow me around, follow my life around, which I think used to work on YouTube a lot more, like people just vlogging their life every day. And I think some creators can still do that. But typically, I just think like people more want a niche of like, okay, I'm coming to this channel for this. So I think I'm in this whole new era of my life and this whole new chapter on YouTube of like thinking, okay, what is my like mission statement of my channel? What is the kind of content I'm really going to enjoy, but also is can work on YouTube? And I think it will be a mix of travel, but probably with a bit more purpose, where I'm going to do like stuff I've really enjoyed in the past is like going to do social impact projects and work with organizations, but in a fun way, like doing things that I feel like really matter as well, doing a deeper thing. And then I still really enjoy kind of group trips and having fun adventures, and then maybe like leaning into a few other topics as well. I don't know. I'm just trying to figure that out right now. But.
Well, and I think you're right, because I've seen the, if someone has a variety channel, if someone has literally any sort of variety, they have been punished by the YouTube algorithm, because you're right. People want to know and what to expect when they come to your channel. And that was my big shift, is because when everyone's vlogging, oh, I got to vlog, right? But that didn't feel super natural for me for that to be everything that I was doing. And so it's almost like I'm kind of like relieved that YouTube has gone that way, where I can focus on one thing, and sure, let's add vlogging aspects to it and storytelling aspects to it. But I feel like it's reached a point where, hey, you don't have to upload 5 times a week for YouTube to think you're relevant. So it's almost kind of like, hey, Louie, you can breathe a little bit. You can probably post 1 a week and still be good, right? And focus on the niche things, and focus on, okay, what is popping, but also how do I bring that back to what I enjoy? Because I'm sure anyone who's listening, you know who Fun for Louie is. You were vlogging before Casey. You, Ben Brown, all of those people, I really feel like you were the first wave who made it popular.
Yeah, right? I mean, I feel like maybe I was second wave, because I feel like there was the original daily vloggers like Shay Carl and Charles Trippy,
right?
But they weren't really doing B-roll and like music. It was just like very raw.
That's true. So y'all were the first who incorporated more of the visuals, and definitely
I do think that. And then I think Casey then took it to the next level and added his own kind of styles to it, and then that's when it really just went mental. Like everyone was daily vlogging after that.
What was the feeling like? How did that affect your channel during that time? Did you find a new audience coming in because he kind of gave a new life to it?
I think it was a mixture of getting an audience from Casey and other people in that scene, and people just being like, wow, like, oh, Siri, this isn't
listening.
The right time, Siri. One sec.
Does your Siri have an accent?
Yeah, I've changed it to an Australian.
An Australian accent. I love it.
Anyway, what was I saying? But I also think because so many people then started daily vlogging and have equally as interesting lives, I did find some of my audience would maybe find someone that was more interesting to them, which is fine. And I think that was...
It became more saturated.
Yeah, I think we live in a ecosystem on YouTube now where it's like just, you are kind of competing. And for a lot of people, they were like, oh, I've watched Louis's life for a few years now, I'm kind of bored, or, you know, I'm going to check someone else's life out. And it makes sense to me. Mm-hmm. And at that point, I think I just buckled down and was like, I'm just going to keep doing my thing. Like, I found this format that's been working for years. But I think slowly I just noticed, this isn't working as well as it was. I don't seem to be tapping into a new audience. And it might be for a lot of reasons, but I wasn't really looking to collab and spend loads of time with other YouTubers, partly because I was just constantly traveling around the world. So, you know, there was multiple things I felt during that, but I did it was really exciting to see so many other people vlogging. And I also think something that helped that people get into that mindset, which when I started, no one was understood what I was doing, was like the whole like people sharing their lives on Instagram stories every day, which wasn't a thing when I started. Snapchat was a thing, but it wasn't quite like people like honestly daily vlog on Instagram stories. That's just what Instagram stories are, but they're just little snippets of their life. And because it became like so normal for everyone to do it, I think it eased everyone into this idea of like, oh, this is cool, I can do this. And then loads
YouTube
and loads
vlogs takes a little bit more production value and time, right? Because I was always amazed by your consistency and that, hey, you're producing vlogs in 4K. You're going that extra mile. And I was always curious, like a normal vlog, how long would it take you to edit? Like, are you good about filming only what you need?
Pretty much. And I think I'm quite good, even if I filmed more than I need, to quickly scan through and be like, that was the lot. You know, I remember like that bit of the clip was like what I was going to grab. And I think I was averaging like 3-hour edits, which I felt was pretty good.
Yeah.
And no, that was like good. Including obviously some like looking for music, which might take me like half
forever.
An hour. Yeah.
Exactly. I mean, that's amazing. I still can't crack like 4 hours. Everything, for some reason, unless it's just a hey talking to the camera easy video, it's just like 4 to 6 hours. I can't shake it. And that's why the daily format didn't work very well for me.
Yeah, well, I just didn't sleep. That's the trick.
Right.
But it did take its toll, and eventually I was like, I can't do this anymore.
Well, I am curious, how long did that last, and the daily vlogging stint? And throughout that, were you really only getting like 4 hours of sleep throughout?
If it was a really intense trip, then yeah, I'd barely be getting sleep. But I also would like typically stay up. Also, my problem is I get FOMO. So if there's anything happening in the evening, like there's no way tonight, if I have got editing to do, there's no way I'm going to be able to pull myself away from like the barn dance or whatever we're doing to go and edit. Like, I just can't do that. So my problem is I have to wait till everyone's stopped, everyone's gone to bed, and then I'm like, right, it's edit time. So I'd typically then stay up from midnight till like 3 a.m., 4 a.m. Then I'd try and sleep probably for like 6 or 7 hours. So I'd wake up at like 10 or 11. That would be my typical sleeping pattern during the daily vlog years.
Gotcha.
And I was daily, I think I pretty consistently daily vlogged for like, I think almost 5 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
And what's so cool is you've inspired so many people. Personally, have you not met John yet, my boyfriend?
I feel like I have.
Maybe briefly. Okay. Because he was such a big fan of you. You guys definitely need to hang out. He needs to come to one of these things. Yeah. But almost everyone in my life, if I even mention your name, it's like, he inspired me to do X, Y, Z. And like everyone cool. here, you know, you really, I feel like even though you don't make that much educational stuff, you're still like a creator's creator.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people grew up watching your stuff. And so do you interact with, you know, like people day to day? Do you have random people coming up to you and be like, Louis, you inspire me so much?
It does happen a lot. I think also I'm tall and I got dreads. So like people spot me a mile off. So I still,
you stick
weird.
Out.
It's weird, like I feel like my channel's not super engaged right now compared to the previous years, but I still feel like every time I step outside, like someone notices me, comes over, says that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And it's nice in a way. I'm like, even if right now I'm not having the biggest impact with my current content, it's this like legacy. And I feel like I get people all the time.
100%.
Like, even the other day I was on a plane and one of the flight attendants like passed me a note, and I was like, she was like, you've changed my life, I'm
awesome.
A flight attendant because of you, like I wanted to travel the world. And I was like, oh, this is so nice.
That's,
and it's like,
so cool.
So I still get that all the time, and I got to remind myself of that, you know, when you have those days you're like, oh, I'm like, my channel's dying and whatever, and then I'm like, I need to look at the bigger picture, and like I've had over 300 million views on my videos, and you know, people's lives have been impacted. Yeah. And that was like part of what I want, really wanted, you know.
And I think that's such a good word, legacy, because you're so many, even if, you know, we all know YouTube is an ebb and a flow for sure, but you've been doing it for so long that you've impacted so many people. And it's on the level of, you know, like a common celebrity, like a B-list celebrity, where maybe I've watched a season of their show, but they're kind of omnipresent in a way to where if you saw them walking around, you'd be like, oh, hey, what's up? You're awesome. You know, I feel like you've been doing it for so long and have like the quality, and, you know, you can impact someone with two of your videos. So I feel like, I think that's what a lot of people strive for. So basically, you're doing a great job, Louis.
Thanks.
You're great. You're fantastic.
I was really encouraged last night. We had this fireside chat. Justine was like talking about burnout and we just put the cameras away. It was like really, really cool. But something she said, which I was really encouraged by, was that she's had these huge dips in her channel over the, how long? 12 years or something crazy? So she's like been on YouTube years more than me, but she was talking about these dips. And then at that dip where she felt like her channel was at its lowest, she would then, and which she said was kind of happening like every 3 years, there'd be this like undulation, and she would then just shift to what she just really was passionate and wanted to be doing and making, even if that was different to her previous content. And I think that is the, that is a shift and process I'm figuring out right now. And I would have, I'm really excited to see in 6 months time what my channel looks like, because
we've seen so many creators come out on the other side.
Yeah.
And that's what was so cool, hearing that. And even someone else who you guys will hear soon on the podcast, Shelby Church, she's someone who, she's been doing YouTube for 10 years. She used to be like a makeup beauty vlogger. And now she's making videos on the level of like similar to like Matt Diavella, I would say, just picking specialized videos and, you know, oh, a really cool concept of like something random, like 10 things that you don't know about a Tesla car, or just very niche things, and they've found an audience again. And it's encouraging, because that means we can go off, find new things, come back, and hey, we might find a new audience, we might find an old audience. So it's never over. And I think the algorithm, as harsh as it can be, it can also be help when you need to start new, something new.
Because I also wouldn't want to be stuck in a rut where like my videos are really succeeding, but I'm unhappy making that content. So I'm kind of glad that I'm being forced into this new season.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, it's good.
Let's talk about a little bit about the World Flight, because I got the opportunity to see the first half of it at Buffer Festival last year.
It was actually only the first 20 minutes, so it's going to be a 90-minute doc. So that would be in like only the first like fifth or sixth of it.
Okay. Well, the first 20 minutes was so intense and so good. I mean, I was literally on the edge of my seat, and I was watching, you know, I watched some of the vlogs too. And the entire time, I could not wrap my brain around how you were doing it. So I guess you saying that, oh yeah, you got a month behind, which is more than understanding. But what has been the process? Because I can't believe you were going through the footage by yourself, first of all.
Yeah.
That's insane. What was the process from, okay, I'm making the vlogs, but also we're going to make a whole feature film out of this. What were the steps for that? Because obviously it's taken a minute, understandably.
Oh my gosh, yeah. So initially we were like, let's make a doc and also I'll vlog it. Yeah. So I knew that from the beginning. So from the very beginning, like a lot of the situations we were like, I want to make a good vlog, but I also want to miss, I want to deliberately cut out some of the scenes which I think we should save for the doc, so it doesn't completely ruin all of the story. So a lot of the interviews on the ground and a lot of the most dramatic moments we just completely left out of the vlogs, which we had to then, so that was like a discussion, an ongoing discussion every day of like, oh, should we, shall I put this in or take it out?
And was it just you and JP? Did you have a producer or someone to bounce ideas off of?
No, it was just me and JP.
Okay.
We tried to get, we had someone producing, like helping us try to just, essentially just a producer of the trip to help us organize like where we were going to stay and stuff like that, but not really content wise.
So it was JP flying the plane and you capturing all the content with multiple cameras.
Yeah, pretty much. So I was like essentially directing, and even for, even because we didn't have an idea of exactly when we were landing in places, we would land, JP would like go and rest because he'd been flying, and then I would like do an Instagram story and say, hey, is there anyone in Karachi in Pakistan who can like show us around and I can do an interview with, and then I'd get a response, and then we'd like meet random people like every location, and then I would go and set up two cameras and do an interview with them on my own, which was crazy because then it was like I'd never done interview stuff before, so I watched all these tutorials on how to do interviews, then I'd like rig up the lav mics and like have one of the sound recorders and all that. So I learned, kind of taught myself all that from scratch, and it was like a one-man show, and JP was, yeah, he was the pilot, he was planning all the flights. whilst I was doing that, often he was like planning out the next flight and having to call ahead, and like it's so much more
hopefully sleeping.
Yeah,
because you want the pilot to be the one sleeping, hopefully.
Yeah, so it was understandable that he couldn't be as actively involved with the filming. But then, yeah, then so we got the last couple of months of 2017, I was just recovering and resting and just, you know, gaining back my sanity. Then the beginning of 2018, beginning of last year, I went down to Cape Town, and I had at the time like a team down there working with Live the Adventure. Yeah. And they had been looking for a production team to help with a post-production, and amazingly this guy reached out who lived in Cape Town, and I knew him from like 10 years ago in London. He's like, I know Louis, we used to live opposite each other, and I'm, my background is documentary film editing. So we met up. He's like the most amazing guy, shout out to Nick. And he has been the main full-time editor on this doc for like almost 2 years. Like not just editing, but really building the story out, watching it over and over, figuring out where we need bits of voiceovers to, you know, and trying to compile this really like up and down kind of pretty, because it's all obviously the whole thing's chronological, but to watch it as a 90-minute doc, you want to feel the right emotions at certain times. You have to like,
there needs to be a build. Yeah, you need to
build like a story arc around it.
Right.
It's not like you're making any of the story up, but you're plucking the right moments to help the arc flow. So it was like really back and forth with that, pulling in additional characters that could give narration over. So something that really helped it was we got a senior pilot in to talk through what had happened from a position of wisdom. Because when we were talking about it, it's like, oh, look at these two guys. Like even JP's not super experienced pilot, but to have like a super experienced pilot that had done around the world flight, like give his thoughts on what we did, added weight to it. So there's all these kind of things people didn't think about. We had to do huge amounts of post interviews with us about how we felt and what happened. Right. So it's like,
where you have to put yourself in the position. I always wonder how people do that with reality TV, because you want to talk like you're in the moment.
Yeah.
Right. Was that weird narrating it like so much time after and being like,
yeah. So I did like 9 hours of post interview stuff, going through each moment and how I felt and what happened, and like, and then we went and had to go back through and like re-record some of the voiceover. So it's been like this really huge process.
And with the editor, how did he ingest 3 months of footage? Did you have to sit there next to him and be like, okay, this is what happened, or did he
so
just
he
sit
watched
there
through
and
all
watch?
The vlogs he watched okay. through all the vlogs, and then we gave him all the raw footage. So he's got like, we've got a duplicate huge hard drive of like, I think it ended up at, I want to say like 15 or 17 terabytes.
Oh my God. Do you have, what is it? Like a 6 big or like,
yeah,
what
yeah,
is?
Yeah, yeah, okay. So is that Lacey or?
Yeah, Lacey, like 6 big RAID drive.
Yeah, yeah, something like that. Yeah. So he has one. I've got one back up in LA. And then we were bouncing back and forth. He was sending me he was doing like section by section, which is that 20-minute section you saw. That's actually completely changed now. Like the main moments haven't, but the intros change, and so it's been lots of back and forth, showing people, getting perspectives. So it's been such an amazing eye-opening experience of like what is documentary filmmaking all about. And it was so difficult coming from a place that where we've like, here's the trip, here's all the footage, but we haven't really built a story other than we flew around the world. So I wanted to like really pull the most engaging story out. So I've learned so much, but I feel like my audience have been struggling with the patience side of it, right? Because they're like, how has it taken you this long? Like,
well, to add a little perspective for Louis's audience, I just listened to, do you know who Ken Burns is?
No.
So he's an iconic documentary filmmaker. And actually, so in Final Cut, there's a thing called Ken Burns effect, where automatically zoom in and zoom out of pictures. Okay. So he invented that. He basically made it a documentary, like a way to make a documentary and using a lot of pictures adding a little bit of movement. He's iconic for that.
Wow.
But he's been a documentary filmmaker for decades, and he just had an interview with Tim Ferriss, and they were talking about the process of making one project. So he'll do like a 5-hour docuseries for PBS or stuff, and they spend 6 to 8 years on their projects. So just to add a little perspective, I mean, you filming for 3 months straight, an adventure around the world, I think it's actually an understanding amount of time to spend, you know, 2, 3, or even 4 years, hopefully not, but yeah, on a project like that.
Well, this is going to be, so 2 years ago, we were still on the flight. So I'm hoping by the time it's finished, cut and ready to send out to the Kickstarter supporters and also launch on a platform that we're still under discussions.
Yeah. Netflix, please.
Well, we've actually had an offer from another streaming platform, but anyway, I'll chat to you about that later. But what's exciting, but it's definitely going out to the Kickstarters first.
Yes, right? Don't want to anger that, them more.
No, it's more that I want to honor their support from the start because yeah, they were the ones who enabled it to happen. Yeah. I invested a lot more money than we raised.
Oh, this sounds so expensive, Louis.
Oh my gosh, yeah. So that was, I think all in, including the Kickstarter money, I've put in, well, it costs over probably like 160 grand. Anyway, and that's not including me buying the plane because we sold it afterwards.
You know what's a funny story?
Yeah.
My entertainment lawyer helped you buy that plane.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, we got
Shout
the same
lawyer.
Shout
out to Anita.
Thanks, Anita. Anyway, my point is,
sorry,
I underestimated. Yeah, so so it'll be pretty much exactly 2 years from when we finished the flight to release the doc, which I don't think is too bad.
No, not
I estimated
all.
It would be more like a year, right, but I just wildly underestimated. So
160 plus the plane, plus the gear, plus your time that's worth money.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So that's lost out. Like those 3 months, I couldn't really do a lot of brand deals where I would be earning money typically. I mean, the vlogs did really well, but a lot of the money, as you know, as a YouTuber comes in from doing branded trips and blah, blah, blah. So anyway, yeah, I mean, it was a bit of a sacrifice in my end, but it was like something I really wanted to do. So
I think it'll be worth it. I mean, what's so cool about these projects is maybe when you're in the middle of it, it's so much work. But when you're on the other side, I mean, you will be a proper documentary filmmaker, even though you have documented your life for so long. You definitely like deserve so much credit for that. There's a different element in, as you can tell, building a 90-minute story. So it will be epic when you're on the other side and you'd be like, I'm a proper documentary filmmaker. Give me all of your money
hopefully
to do a proper project.
Hopefully it's start of many long-form content projects I work on. Like, I'm really excited about that. Like, doing more like episodic documentary series and feature length. I'm thinking this could be a big part of my future.
100%. So with that, what are the big things that you're looking forward to in the future? Because I think you've done a good job. So many people always say, hey, I'm going to use YouTube as a stepping stone, but I want to be on TV. But a lot of times you find that's just a merry-go-round and it brings you round and round. Nothing ever happens. And you've really done a good job focusing on just building your own thing and building your own audience and it being not enough, but you've just done a great job with that. And do you get pulled in with, oh, I need to be on TV. I need to be in a movie or, you know, like, do you see that as a next step now, maybe? Have things changed? Do you always kind of want to do your own thing?
I think even if I get on TV, whatever that is, like, I don't even know what TV is. Is it like...
Right. It's changed. So I think a lot of people look at Travel Channel.
Yeah. So if it,
you know,
I mean, I think
HGTV.
I think it'd be cool to get on some shows where, but the thing is, I would still want to like direct what that looked like and not have someone telling me what to do.
And it would be someone telling you what to do.
Yeah. And
right?
I've spoken to people that have been like, even Josh, I'm sure he would say is like, he wouldn't do what he's just shot like a 16 episode TV show. And he said he wouldn't do it again. Yeah. Like, it was like hard being told what to do when you're so used to having the freedom to do your own stuff. And that is kind of the feedback I've got from most YouTubers that dip their toe into that world. It's like, whoa, this is super controlled. And I feel like after the freedom of being able to direct and shoot how we want, and even like, yeah, some other friends of mine did it as well. They did a show for the BBC and really did not enjoy the process of what that meant, like the interference of people that were telling them what to do and stand there and say this line again. It like pulled away from what I feel like people want from connecting with creators, is this authenticity. And like, even
and
if
that's why you got numbers in the first place.
Yeah,
it's
not
different.
About professional, like, obviously both of us really admire like the quality of footage and the cameras and the tech and stuff, and I feel like sometimes I go too far down that like you know, and think and forget, like, people don't care too much. Like, literally, point in fact, like, my friend Janelle, who blew up on YouTube, a lot of you know her, the girl that, like, has the van life and...
She has a snake. Yeah. She got 4 million views on her first YouTube video.
12 million on her
second. So, she's over a million subscribers.
She films and edits everything on her iPhone. And for me, it shows you that, like, it's all about your personality and and authenticity and connection with the audience. It really doesn't matter, like, what camera you're shooting on and, like, trying to make it.
But it's still fun, though.
Yeah. I still like the filmmaking element of it, of, like, shooting beautiful B-roll and slow-mo shots, blah, blah, blah. But I think reality is, if it's just that and there's no personality and you're not having that kind of... more raw and real
then
connection.
They can just watch TV.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, that's what I've got to keep remembering. And I think it's constantly trying to get that balance of, like, remembering that people like feeling like they can relate to something. And, like, maybe even, like, inspiring creators could feel like, I could make that. Mm-hmm. And I think that's part of it. If it's too professional, you're like, you know, that's depressing. I can never make that.
There has to be something to aspire towards. Because I think a lot of YouTube is feeling like you're not just friends with them, but I want to be them one day. And I think that's a lot of your audience. That was a lot of Casey's audience, that a lot of, you know, Pete McKinnon's audience. So, and it's also encouraging to the people who want to start. You don't have to start with a Red camera. Mm-hmm. Most likely, if you're shooting all your stuff with a Red, you're probably not going to get as many views as maybe someone with a snake.
Especially
and shooting
with
this
new iPhone like this. Yeah. I'm definitely going to get one. Mm-hmm. And I was tempted to be like, shall I start trying to vlog on this? Like, just out of interest.
iPhone vlogs?
Someone tweeted today, do you know this guy, Syndicate? His name's Tom.
Yeah, yeah.
So he's vlogged his life on his iPhone for the last 3-4 years.
Interesting.
But he edits it on his computer. But he said he was having problems with the 4K front-facing 60. The files, this is getting a bit geeky now, but saying like his editor couldn't import them onto the PC. And I wondered if it would be a problem with the Mac as well. So he's basically was like the logistical nightmare of shooting his vlogs in 4K, even though the phone's capable of.
Maybe that's why, because I'm on an XPS still. Okay. And I was having a little bit of issues. Maybe it's better for the Mac, but I think you have to consider like the codecs as well. Yeah. You know, like a lot of the footage on here looks amazing.
Is it H.265? Like, what is the problem with it?
It is.
Sorry, guys.
Yeah, you know, I mean, they enjoy this. I don't know. I got to look into it more, but I know even for the pictures too, it gets into some crazy like .HEIC, if I mess stuff up, where it's like a high efficiency, whatever. And then, yeah, I mean, John actually edits all of his videos from, he films everything with his iPhone. He dropped cameras like 6 months ago and he's like never been happier.
Wow.
And he does all the skating and stuff, you know? So it's for him, it's just something he has his iPhone that he uses as his phone and he has another one as a camera.
And what does he edit on?
Premiere. He pulls it in PC. And yeah, so he uses a MacBook Pro, but a lot of the time image capture will be wonky with it.
Yeah.
So I found with my previous iPhone, when you put it into a Windows machine, it actually opens it up just as a USB drive. So you can go in and pull what you want. So it's weird that it's almost like a better workflow on a Windows, but on Mac, you have to use image capture. However, I've had some awkward moments with... like what you said with new footage, so maybe it'll get better, who knows.
I've tried the PC thing. I'm back to Mac now.
Yeah. We were working with
Intel and it was cool. I liked that I could try the PC thing because that's where my background was, obviously, before Mac's really got powerful and stuff. But I'm back to Mac now. I think it's because I got this amazing secondhand opportunity to buy an iMac Pro. It's like the fully decked. I got it last year, but it was like 12 core, 128 gig of RAM, like ridiculous.
And it's a nice display built in.
It's like five point something K. It was like amazing. And now that I'm not as mobile, I've got a MacBook Pro as well, but like I do a lot of my editing on that iMac Pro and it's like just so good.
Yeah, yeah. And anyway, a lot of times, when you can... A lot of times, Apple, you're buying convenience and ease of use and power. Maybe it's not as powerful as people always say, oh, you can build a PC. But a lot of it is just creators who want to create, and they want to, they don't want to build a PC, guys.
I was having like so many glitches with the PC as well, like different things, and like the way I preview files is really difficult. And then
there's always a solution for that.
Yeah, I did.
It's an app that you have to download.
I told you about it.
Did you?
Yeah, Seer. I know. There's one called Seer, which I maybe there's another one.
Quick Look. Called Quick Look, and it works actually amazingly.
You just hit the space bar and can see it and flick through it. Okay, cool. Yeah. Anyway,
so if you need to go back at any time,
getting back to my point, I'm going to try and get, when I get the new iPhone, I'm going to try and vlog on that and see how I get on, because I think there's something nice about just pulling out your pocket and like in the moment.
Convenient.
Yeah, right. Just not having to carry a big camera around, even though I've got, like, clip it to my belt. It's not a massive inconvenience. It's like something nice, I think, about like vlogging in your phone.
I have a feeling though that you'll be back to your camera very quick.
You think?
Because I think it's fun. I think it's fun for you, isn't it? Like testing out new stuff. Mm. And because that's with me.
Sony would kill me as well if I still.
You wouldn't be on this trip anymore. No. But wrapping things up, because I think we have a festive night. And then hopefully maybe I can fit in a podcast with Raya after, maybe. Because
She's got loads of cool stuff happening.
Yeah, as well.
I want to tell you about one last thing before we wrap.
And I do have one last question.
Okay. So you were talking about what's next for me and stuff. Yeah. I think I am in this transition stage, but part of that is beyond YouTube, is thinking like, what do I really want to spend my time doing? What do I really want to be? What do I want my ongoing legacy to be? As well as like the one of the first travel creators and stuff like that. But for me, it's like, having been in LA for a year now and speaking to a lot of other big YouTubers, the main message I'm hearing is, especially long-term creators, they feel a bit lost. They feel a little bit like they don't know what they're doing with their lives or their channels or anything. But they want to make more of a difference. And so I'm having heard that and being in a position to be a bit more of a, like, an older mentor figure. Mm-hmm. I'm a little bit older than a lot of the YouTube creators. I want to start this thing called the Social Good Club, where I can support and create this kind of community and network to support creators to do kind of more social impact content on their channels. Awesome. And part of that will be maybe doing like day or weekend trips away on, you know, whether it's like going to plant some trees together, or, you know, talk about the environmental crisis and all these kind of things. And then I also want to do like maybe week-long trips where I take creators away and we'll go and tell stories of hope around topics to do with humanitarian things or environmental issues around the world. And I think collaborating together on highlighting an issue and getting all of our audiences with like a really clear call to action as well, like, this is how we can activate our audiences around the world.
I think that's what's missing, is the call to action, because a lot of people will watch heartwarming stuff, but it's like, well, what can we do to help?
I want it to be more like people don't feel frustrated at the end because they're like, oh, thanks for telling us like this thing, but I don't know what to do. Right. So it's like that's what's impacted me most about some of the documentaries I've watched, when there's a really clear call to action at the end. So I want to kind of figure out how to like excite people about making more of an impact in a fun way, and then also collaborating, because I feel like there's something really exciting when you can collaborate on content together. So I'm kind of going on that journey now and teaming up with people on that, and I think that's going to be a big part of my future.
That's cool.
And I think that could be what a lot of my content on my channel is as well, is like the fun vlogs and traveling, but with groups of other YouTubers with a focus, like with a purpose for the trip, like, we're going to go do this, and then have some really like proactive ways that people can get involved. And then I think long term, if that goes well, is building out this community, so it's not just big creators, but it's like smaller influencers, and then eventually just anyone that wants to get involved. Maybe there's like little groups around, like in cities around the world, where people can get involved. And I know people like Yes Theory are doing similar things, where they're trying to get their audiences to meet up around the world and do things together. So I think that's the kind of direction I'm heading in.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, that's an amazing point to end off on. But I have one question, because, you know, Live the Adventure, it's not just your brand, it's not just on t-shirts, it's really, I mean, you formed a lot of structure around it, right? I mean, are you helping manage other creators? It's kind of like tell me a little bit about
so we set it up side. Once I had started building a team around me to manage all of my life and channel and stuff, I realized, oh, I've got like a lawyer now and like someone helping with the brand deals and the contracts, and then somebody else like as my assistant who would just help book flights and stuff. And I realized like once I'd built up a bit of a team, I was like, well, it would make a lot of sense now to like help Raya do all her stuff as well. And then we started taking on a few other travel creators because we had great relationships with the tourism boards and brands I'd worked with, and they were looking to work with like other people. And so, yeah, that started a few years ago. I think probably like 2.5 or 3 years ago, we started as a management company. It's not been like a booming business in terms of like, oh, this is like a really good industry to try and get into, because there's a lot of management companies and we're very niche. It's like the travel creators. I'm more excited about it being this community of friends, and we're doing stuff, and we're just helping as a company with them kind of doing their own thing. But I want to expand out a lot more than just kind of being a management company. And I feel like getting into this long form stuff is that potentially we could be teaming up with creators and helping
doing productions
and doing longer series and working together. One of the ideas we have is really early days yet, but there's this festival happening in Patagonia next year in December called the Eclipse Festival, and it's for the solar eclipse that will be seen from South America. And I think it's going to be like, they're predicting like 100,000 people from indigenous tribes all across Central and South America. So we want to like do this epic road trip down from California down to Patagonia, which we'll probably try and do in like 3 months. But I want to make like an epic adventure documentary about that, as well as vlogging and stuff. But I think for me, like the idea of like Live the Adventure being like this adventure long
content house
would be churning all the things out. That's the direction for that, I think. And then we've also started, like, we've grown our Facebook page in the last 6 months, like 250,000 extra followers, and it's like really, we've started monetizing that with like
pre-roll now, right?
Yeah, and we're putting out like 5 videos a week on there. Is like more like typical Facebook, like travel inspo videos, where we reached out to a network of like 300 smaller travel creators, and we're like repurposing their content and saying, hey, look, can we repurpose this? We're going to put it on our Facebook page and tag you in the caption or the comments, whatever. And then that's been a really exciting journey into the Facebook world as well, Facebook video, because I've never tried that before.
Wow,
so it's like a whole new thing. So yeah, there's lots I feel like I can do around a brand rather than my name.
Right.
So I'm excited to see what other stuff Live the Adventure could do as a brand.
So cool.
Because it's not centered around me. And we've started doing brand deals now with the Live the Adventure platforms without me having to be doing them.
Yeah, I mean, that's the dream of like delegation and not having your face attached to it. And
it gives other people a platform. So it's not just me. It's like we're hopefully helping support other creators and you know, getting them. No, and some of the videos on our Facebook have hit like over 5 million views. Like, it's really been cool to see that. And
oh my gosh, if I didn't hear the fire trucks that are about to pick us up and take us to dinner, I would go on for another hour. So maybe we'll do a part two at some point. But Louis, thank you so much for being on.
Thanks.
Make sure to check out his YouTube channel, Live the Adventure. All the things will be linked in the description below. And yeah, I find that's my favorite thing to talk about right now is how do you take your brand, expand it into more, expand to all the different platforms. So it's so encouraging to hear that you're doing that. It's working. So next time in LA, maybe we'll do a part two.
Part two coming soon.
Heck yeah. Thanks. It's breaking down towards the end. Thank you so much for being on. Make sure to check out Louis, guys.
Thanks for having me.